We'll start with you, Melissa Fornoy. What's your assessment of what's going on down at the Capitol with just over a week to go in the regular session?
Well, Jim, it's great to be with you today. I think Lanny's column is really right on. I think there's been some good things that can happen at the session. Hopefully we'll pass the prison reform alternatives package today and tomorrow. The state budget is really a wreck. I think that's really what Lanny's talking about with cuts to health care and education. And the House just has gone mad. They just don't even want to spend the money that is available and going to close veteran cemeteries. And so I think we're facing a real tough next 10 days till the end of the session to try and salvage a budget that can work for all Louisiana citizens. So I'm really concerned.
We go to Quinn Hillier, who doesn't cover the Capitol quite as closely as he once did, but he certainly knows the lay of the land. And right now, there are only 41 Democrats in the House and 13 in the Senate, and that's in a chamber that has 105 members on the House side and 39 on the Senate side. Quinn, the governor doesn't have a very good hand to play when it takes a two-thirds majority to get measures through, any kind of tax measures through the process.
No, he doesn't. And first of all, thank you for having me on, Jim, and also it's a delight to be on with Melissa, who is a friend of long standing, and it's funny that we start off talking about Lanny Keller because he is a very dear mutual friend, and he is indeed very wise as an observer of the Capitol. I don't know where the budget's going. As I say, I haven't covered it that closely, but one thing I have followed very, very closely, Melissa mentioned, is this prison reform bill, the sentencing reform bill. And that is absolutely crucial. It is crucial for the budget and for reasons of justice. They have modified it. There's no way that this is going to be letting dangerous folks out. It still stays tough on dangerous criminals, but it finds alternative ways to punish and rehabilitate people who are found, you know, who are guilty of minor nonviolent crimes. And I want to, for any Republicans out there, especially Republican legislators, get your act together and get this passed. And it's not just Republicans, because John Bel Edwards has not been always on the right side on this. He's kowtowing to the sheriffs. Sheriffs, stop blocking this bill. This is crucially important, and I want to say it needs to be done for all the right reasons, and because it's good public policy, but also in memory of somebody who unfortunately died in the last year of cancer at only 50 years old, Kevin Kane, led a very the conservative Pelican Institute, and he was a conservative leader for prison reform, for this package of bills. That's what he dedicated the last three years of his life to, and he's the one that got this to the position where they could enter this legislative session with a chance to pass it. And in honor of Kevin Kane, who came back to Louisiana from New York after Katrina to help get its government back on track, you should stop fighting this and get it passed.
All right. This has a solid chance of passage. It's not a done deal, but
right.
Unlike that, the minimum wage and equal pay, they're dead. In Arkansas, one state away, in a state as poor or poorer than Louisiana, the minimum wage, the state one, is $8.50. Ours remains at $7.25. There are only five states that now adhering to the federal level, and Louisiana is one of them. Quinn, is that something that is an appropriate thing, or you as a good, solid conservative believe minimum wage should not be part of the government process?
I believe that the minimum wage is actually economically not a very good idea, but they've had it for such a long time. It's part of the process. I don't see any need to raise it other than I think every 5 years there should be an automatic inflation adjustment so that we're not arguing over whether it should go jump from 7 to 10 to 12 to whatever, and you're not pricing out the market. But since people have gotten used to the current level, well, when prices go up, eventually, so should the minimum wage catch up. But you wouldn't have to vote on it every time. It should be one of these automatic cost of living adjustment things, and that would get it out of the political realm.
Melissa Flournoy, as far as minimum wage and equal pay, what do you think?
Well, I think that Quinn is absolutely right, and if the minimum wage had kept up with inflation over the last 30 years, it would be at about $9.68. I testified on raising the minimum wage last week in the Senate Finance Committee, and I was really distressed at sort of the lack of information and knowledge of the folks on Senate Finance on who's making minimum wage. In Louisiana, 212,000 people are working and making minimum wage. If you work 52 weeks a year making minimum wage, you're making less than $15,000. You know, it's a poverty wage. It's not a living wage. You know, we've got a crisis of poverty in Louisiana, and we've got public policies that are keeping people mired in chronic poverty. And so the reason we need to look at the minimum wage, we need to look at a living wage, we need to really help our working families in Louisiana. You know, 70% of the folks making minimum wage are folks trying to raise a family. And we've really got to focus on skills development, but we've also got to work with the business industry and industry, lobby and others, to get on board with paying a living wage. We cannot keep people trapped in poverty. It is absolutely one of the most important things for our future of Louisiana is to help support working families.
All right. What about equal pay for women and men for the same job?
Well, that should be a no-brainer. It's fascinating to me that we're still having to talk about, you know, equal pay in 2017. And, you know, the challenges are that we've got sort of a systemic issue with a lot of employers, and it's the mindset of I want to pay somebody the least I can pay them to maximize my profits. That's sort of the idea. And so we tried to pass a bill on pay transparency this year. It was killed in the House committee. And some of the arguments were just ridiculous. And evidently there are quite a few folks on that committee that think we already have equal pay legislation that works, that there already is pay transparency. And so I'm hoping that lobby will get on board and talk about how to encourage employers to voluntarily pay their employees, both male and female, the same wage for the same jobs. We really need to address this. It's about fairness, and it's about family.
Start with you, Patrick. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, you guys were talking about minimum wage, and you yourself, Jim, said that Arkansas is more poor than Louisiana, yet it has a higher minimum wage. Well, that might explain part of the problem. When you raise minimum wage, you basically eliminate job opportunity for people that need it the most. Employers can only afford to pay low-skill workers so much. When you raise minimum wage, you basically eliminate jobs. You do nothing to raise income. You just eliminate jobs for people that need it the most, and you're really hurting the people that are poor and at the bottom of the at the income level. You're eliminating jobs for them, for the people that need it most.
All right, I want to get Melissa in. Thank you, Patrick. Melissa, your thoughts about minimum wage and whether it hurts the economy?
I think that's the sort of the conventional wisdom that's being peddled by the conservatives and lobby and Americans for Prosperity. I don't think the data bears that out. We had presentations last week at Senate Finance about the economy in Arkansas is actually doing better than the economy in Louisiana, and more people are working. If you look at the states that have higher minimum wages, they have more people working, more people making a living wage. I just think that is doesn't stand up to scrutiny of factual analysis.
All right, I'm looking. You're right about other states having minimum wage levels much higher than Louisiana. And in California, for example, it's $10 an hour, and I was just out there. Their unemployment rate's 4.9%. They're having some issues as well, but they also have 40 million people. But you can make the case that they're doing significantly better than is Louisiana. Quinn Hillier, I kind of like your idea about an automatic increase, but I suspect many conservatives would not agree to that.
Well, I don't know, but I do want to say the caller, I actually do agree with the caller. He is right, despite what Melissa says. All the long-term studies that I have ever seen have shown that a higher minimum wage is indeed a deterrent to jobs. And, you know, if we did not have, you know, 40, 50, 60 years of having minimum wages and therefore conservatives having politically lost the argument, I might say just get rid of them. But we've got them. I think that they're part of the landscape, and being part of the landscape, they should become something that is depoliticized. And that's why, as I say, I would be okay with automatic cost of living adjustment raises for the minimum wage, but not every year. I mean, companies can't just change their wages every single year, change their wage scale, but have some sort of mechanism to take it out of politics. But I would keep it, you know, frankly, as low as it is now with the inflation adjustment, though.
All
but
right.
So the same dollar purchasing power.
Well, in California, it's $10, $10.50 if you have more than 26 employees, and next year goes to $11, $12, the following $13, $14, and then $15 in 2022. So we'll see what happens in Louisiana, but it looks like we're going to be the last state to hold on to the federal level.
Well, Jim, here, my last comment is I'm really frustrated by the fact that the state of Louisiana and the federal government have to subsidize business, because there are businesses in Louisiana that are paying their people minimum wage, not providing health benefits, not providing paid leave. And then those same people who are working 40, 60, 80 hours a week, because they may have to have two or three jobs to try and get by, are still having to be part of our health care safety net, are on Medicaid, or getting food stamps, because business is really being subsidized by government. And I just feel like businesses need to be paying a living wage. And it's the same folks that complain about people being poor and on food stamps and on Medicaid that are refusing to pay their people. It just aggravates me.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number for Melissa Flournoy and Quinn Hillier. Yesterday in the Texas legislature, a fracas broke out on the House floor. Last week in Montana, a congressional candidate, Greg Gianforte, who won the only U.S. House seat in Montana, he beat up a reporter. What's going on with the tenor of politics, Quinn Hillier, in our country?
It's terrible. It's terrible, and I'm actually shopping around a column right now that was co-written with a former Episcopal Bishop of Mississippi, who is a thoughtful liberal, like I think I'm a thoughtful conservative, and we've co-written a column on just this subject, talking about the need to restore civility to politics. I'm hoping to find somebody to publish it soon. It's a very bad situation, and it runs both ways. Any side that says, oh, it's only the other side, they're just lying. Part of it is, frankly, it's the Trump phenomenon. I mean, you know, talk about lowering the level of discourse. Donald Trump stood up there again and again last year and said hecklers should be beaten up, send them to the hospital, et cetera, et cetera. But on the left, you've got, you know, groups that are rioting because they don't like a speaker, and that's just obscene. So everybody should remember that we don't get anywhere by shutting down the other side. We don't get anywhere by violently shutting down the other side. And we don't get anywhere by yelling at each other, but instead have a discussion like you and I and Melissa are having right now.
Melissa?
Well, I agree. I think that the poison of partisanship has infected the country. And even in Louisiana, you know, we've got still have David Vitter sort of lurking in the background up at the state capitol, sort of fomenting discontent and pushing a very partisan agenda, working with the House Republicans. And, you know, frankly, I think if we could get people of goodwill in a room to focus on solving problems, we actually could put Louisiana first. And the fact that so much of what's going in the legislature right now is intended to deny Governor John Bel Edwards any wins legislatively and to make him a one-term governor really frustrates me, because it's a short-term political game instead of putting Louisiana first and focusing on solutions. And I just think it's very frustrating for everybody involved. And I wish that people of goodwill could get in the same room and focus on compromise and focus on solutions to our problems. Louisiana has been in a ditch. Bobby Jindal wrecked our state budget. And we've got to move past that. We have got to focus on how to fix some of our problems.
It is interesting, Quinn. We're about to go to a break, but you're blaming this in part on the president.
Blaming in part of the president, but also saying that the president, his campaign last year was a symptom of the problem. I also do want to say it goes both ways. Melissa, there are good reasons, other than just wanting to win, that a lot of these Republican legislators are opposing John Bel Edwards. We can talk about that more after the break.
Dan downtown. Dan, good afternoon, or good morning, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hey, good morning. Mr. Hillier, with regard to promoting civility in our politics, would it help if we could get the money out of the legislative process so that the rednecks and other people without money would not have to express their frustration in a violent way with the fact that corporate America's exercise of First Amendment rights means that the little guy and gal doesn't get to exercise it?
All right, Quinn, what do you think about money and politics? Is that part of the problem?
Not really. The amount of money we spend on politics, as George Will repeatedly points out, is far less than is spent by one company advertising Frosted Flakes every year. And everybody has access to free speech. Everybody can exercise free speech. I don't think that that's part of the problem. I do want to go back to what we were talking about before very quickly to say that at one and the same time, you can't say that we need civility in politics and then immediately pivot and say only the other side is being unreasonable. And that's why I wanted to take slight issue with my friend Melissa. You've got to give the other side credit. In this case, she should give Republicans credit for actually believing what they say. They philosophically believe it. It's not just that they're out there wanting to stop the governor. There, you know, the governor is playing politics. The left plays politics just the same. And the first step towards civility is to say, okay, we understand that there's politics involved and power considerations involved, but we also understand that there is sincerity involved, and we need to listen to the other side's sincere beliefs and see where we match up, rather than just accuse them of only acting for power, right, political motives.
Melissa.
You know, I think Quinn is right, and I wish that we could have a venue where people of goodwill could have those conversations that are policy-driven. But I do feel like money, it's about money and power and prestige. And so many of these decisions. And I do wish that we could, at least in the last 10 days of this legislative session, have sort of a bipartisan coming together.
What about money and politics, the question Dan asked?
Well, I think Dan's right. I do think that there's a role for money in politics, and I do feel like that there are a few large corporations and large donors that have undue influence. Uh-huh. And I think that's a real challenge for how we get things done.
Well, an example of this that's been reported in several places over the last few days, Cory Booker, the liberal senator from New Jersey, has been defending Jared Kushner. It turns out Kushner gave him $41,000 in his last campaign. And today, in the New York Times and in other newspapers, Kushner is front page news. The Times story says the president's son-in-law and senior advisor was looking for a direct line to President Vladimir Putin of Russia. A search that in mid-December found him in a room with a Russian banker whose financial institution was deeply intertwined with Russian intelligence and remains under sanction by the United States. Is there any smoke here, Quinn Hillier?
There might very well be smoke it's not like some unpatriotic sell out the country kind of thing, but there are business ties between various people in Trump world and Russia. There always have been, and sometimes you have business ties that, without you knowing it, you start thinking along the lines of those business ties without doing anything directly illegal. The thing that gets me about the Trump White House is, rather than say, okay, we want to get to the bottom of this and root out any mistakes and wrongdoing, they keep fighting, and Trump keeps obsessing about it and tweeting about it, when what he should be doing is cooperating. This bit about Jared Kushner, to have a 31-year-old with this portfolio in the first place, a 31-year-old without any experience, is absolutely nuts.
Well, I think he's 36. He's 36.
To have a young guy without any background in this stuff trying to deal, doing this cloak and dagger back channel stuff, it really ill serves the country. It's both naive and arrogant, and it is entirely inappropriate.
Well, in 1961, John Kennedy named his 35-year-old brother the Attorney General of the United States, Robert Francis Kennedy, and that turned out pretty well. But
I'm not just focusing on the age. I'm saying if you're that young and you have no experience, Bobby Kennedy actually had plenty of government experience before he became AG.
All right. Melissa, this Jared Kushner story, is it going to lead to some kind of peril for the president?
I certainly hope so. I'm just so astonished that the Teflon Don seems to be just untouchable. Jared Kushner is in so far over his head. I hope that he and Ivanka sort of wake up and realize they need to go back to New York City, because they're about to take themselves down and the country with them. And I keep waiting for the grown-ups to show up. I really wish that the Republican Party and the leaders of the Republican Party would do some sort of intervention, if it was at all possible, because I'm just concerned about the mental stability of the president, the lack of capacity of some of the people around him, and what the damage that's being done to the United States on the world stage. And so I think retiring Jared and Ivanka back to their role as children of the president would go a long way towards trying to right the ship.
All right, here's a question from Heather in Mid-City. Quinn asking if you would be comfortable with the President Pence.
Not only would I be comfortable, I would be shouting out in joy. I started writing in 2008 that Mike Pence should be president. I have been wanting Mike Pence to be president for a long, long time. I think he's a wonderful man. He's stable. You might not always agree with him, but he's stable. He's thoughtful. He's a good and decent man. I would love that.
Melissa, would you be okay with President Mike Pence?
Lord, give me strength. I actually think that Pence would be a more stable influence for the country and the world. So, yes, I would like to see him move to the middle and have appoint a good vice president. I think that the country is really... we are more vulnerable today and have less leadership than at any point in my lifetime. And so, I am very concerned about the stability of our current president. And if we could have a President Pence, I disagree with his policies immensely, But I do not consider him to be a dangerous lunatic.
Now, Quinn, you were at Donald Trump's opening rally on the campaign trail at Ladd Stadium in Mobile. He filled the stadium, or pretty close. And
no, it wasn't very close. He lied about that too. The stadium was barely half filled, which is still pretty good.
Okay,
by the way.
All right, but you and I and most people thought this was a lark that would eventually go away, and now he's president, and we've got people saying he's not going to make it through the end of the year, certainly not by the end of the term. What do you think? Is he going to last a full 4 years?
No. No, he's not. In fact, there is a chance that he will be gone by Labor Day, and if he is, we will have a good, solid, thoughtful conservative in Mike Pence who will be a steady influence, and whether you agree with his policies or disagree, as Melissa said, you'll at least know you're in safe hands.
Well, what will take him out?
There was an interesting column about a week or now maybe 2 weeks ago by the guy that actually wrote The Art of the Deal, basically ghost wrote the book for Trump, and it described Trump's psychology that this guy observed while working with Trump, and it all rang true. And at the end of it, this man who understands Trump so well says he thinks that Trump will find some excuse to basically say, "I've proven I'm better than you. You guys don't deserve me, and I've proven my point." And he will resign. It might be wishful thinking on the guy's part, but it's my wishful thinking too.
Well, Melissa, he's not a quitter. What would it take for Donald John Trump to give up the ghost and leave the Oval Office?
I think the threat of impeachment, similar to Richard Nixon, would cause him to resign prior to impeachment.
But with a Republican majority, is it really a realistic prospect that he would be impeached? Quinn, what do you think about that?
It depends on if he did anything. Look, I'm not a Trump fan, but I have not seen any impeachable offenses yet. And I think talk of impeachment when you don't have impeachable offenses is premature, even as much as I would like Trump to leave. So I think we need, for the sake of the country, to be very careful about throwing around the impeachment word.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Dr. Melissa Flournoy and Quinn Hillier. It's been a pleasure. Nice talking with both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jim.